Well, last Sunday, we started a new sermon series, a little summer series on the Song of Songs, which is essentially an erotic love poem that's found in the middle of the Bible. Right? It's about two lovers who are wooing each other out and about in nature. And we talked a little bit about how there's more than one way that we can look at that poem and interpret it, right? You can look at it literally as a love poem. A lot of people read it as an allegory about God's love for humanity. Both of those are valid. But in this series, we're taking a little bit of a different angle. We're primarily using an ecological lens. So I'm using Rabbi Ellen Bernstein's book, Toward a Holy Ecology. Right? And ecology is just the study of our dwelling place. Right? So it's a study of our earth and all of creation. And so we're looking at the song just to see what it might have to say to us about our shared home and about our place in it and how that might inform our spirituality. So this last week, the drama in our backyard has been the robin family. I don't know if any of you have robins, but they've got a little nest that they make in our awning over our patio. And the little babies are, fledging this week. Right, so the parents have been working on that, and it takes about 2 weeks, I think, after they hatch before they start to grow a little restless and they want to leave the nest. And so I think it was last Tuesday, Rachel pulled me over from some place I was at in the yard and was like, you've got to come look at this. And just outside of the nest were the three little babies, and they're just standing there looking down onto the patio, and they weren't quite ready to jump yet. And so, you know, they were just really cute. And then about a week and a half ago, I found three little fledgling wrens that had been like sitting along our fence, also kind of looking down like, how did I get up here? What do I do? But I feel like our backyard is just sort of like filled with like adult robins who are just bringing tons and tons of worms to these little babies almost 24/7. And it's almost time for those babies to get hungry enough to, you know, want to go get worms themselves. So finally, Thursday morning, they took the plunge and they jumped off the awning and away from the nest, and now they'll spend a couple of weeks hopping all over the ground and learning to find food and how to use their wings while their parents are trying to do their best to protect them. We're trying to keep our cat inside as much as we can to limit that threat. But this time of year, it just seems like there's so much for the animals to do, right? They have to survive and thrive and get their kids going. And for those of us who have gardens or yards, which I know not all of us do, but those of us who do, it's like the time of year where you're just trying to keep it tame, right? It's just weeding, weeding, weeding. I know I volunteer over at the farm at St. Joe, and there it's pretty much every time I show up, weeding, 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 carrying buckets of mulch to try and keep the weeds down. That's like the whole game right now. But at the same time that all of this work is being required, you start to see some of the joys of all that work bearing out, right? So the robins are raising these little babies, and that's got to be satisfying. And in our garden, there's strawberries still and snap peas, and because the weather's been good, we're still getting all kinds of lettuces that taste good. I ate a bunch of wild raspberries yesterday from the yard. And so there's like this combination of like, it's both a lot of work and the first fruits of all that labor are paying off. And right, late spring, early summer, these busy times, but there's abundance and there's color and there's all kinds of scent and there's food and there's just life springing up all around. Well, in the Song of Songs, the lover begins the song by pointing toward the world and naming the season and using that to try and make some sense of their own experience. Look, they say, something's happening. Right, the rains have ended, the flowers are starting to come up, the birds have returned, and spring is arriving. So Song of Songs 2, if you have a bulletin, the second page has all of the readings on it if you like to follow along. The lover says, my beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For now the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, and the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. I think the song understands something about being human, and that's that our lives move in seasons. And I think most of us who have been around for some time on this earth, we kind of know that, right? That things like love and faith and our inner lives and our friendships, that these have different phases and they have ebbs and they have flows, and that's all part of the natural process. And there are periods in our lives when everything seems to be growing, right? When maybe relationships are deepening, or maybe you feel like prayer comes more naturally to you, or maybe you just have like creativity and energy and ideas and you're feeling connected to God and to yourself and to the world. Like, I remember having a season like that when I first met Rachel, which, you know, makes sense because you're in sort of the first throes of love. And some of us here together like planted this church around that time, and she and I bought a house, and there's this like fermenting energy. And I feel that a little bit again now, right? I've been coming off of about 2 years of grieving the loss of my dad and my grandma, and I start to feel this little like springtime quality coming back to life in me. And you've hopefully had some times like that of your own in your lives. And we know that those times don't mean that things like grief disappear or that everything in life is perfect. There's always ongoing challenges, but it changes, right? That seasons kind of overlap and don't have hard boundaries. But when we speak of spring, we speak of a certain vibrancy that we feel and a certain stirring of possibilities, as opposed to what we might be described as like a winter season. And we can all imagine what that's like. It's the times when life feels just harder for all kinds of reasons. And I think sometimes when we're in those kinds of seasons, we can be a little bit hard on ourselves. Maybe not all of us, but I tend to have a little bit of a tendency toward that. Or I can sometimes be a little bit impatient with our lives, right? Especially if you're in a time of life where it just feels like you're on a hamster wheel and every day feels a little bit like the one before it. And you're like, okay, when is this going to quite stop? And not really understanding that there could be something deeper that's taking root when it feels like it's the doldrums, right? Even if it doesn't feel like that's what's happening. I think one of the gifts of paying attention to nature is noticing that nature rarely shares our anxieties and our frustrations in these more difficult or boring seasons of life. Right? Nature's pretty chill about it. In the middle of January, the bear trees in Michigan, they are not all in a panic and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm not producing leaves. I should be producing more leaves. Am I ever going to be able to produce leaves again? I don't know. I don't like how I look. My nemesis, the groundhogs, or our nemesis, the groundhogs, they're hibernating, right? They're not like stressed out that they're never going to wake up again. They're just resting. And they accept that life continues and that there are seasons of dormancy that are a necessary part of growth and renewal, right? That like dormancy happens. And the Song of Songs, it doesn't rush through the seasons, right? A lot of the poem unfolds slowly. And a lot of it takes place in the realm of longing rather than in the realm of fulfillment. Right, we have these lovers who again and again, they're searching for one another. We talked last week about how they're like gazelles, right? They'll find one another and then they'll lose one another. And then they'll wait and they'll yearn and they'll dream, and then they call to one another in the night. And then they find each other again and they form a bond, and then they move away from each other again. It's a little bit like waves on a shore, just kind of lapping and returning and returning and receding. And so love in the song, it's not just experienced in the moments where the lovers are together, but love is experienced in their absence, right through that desire. Rabbi Ellen Bernstein, she talks about how, she says, the song situates us in a different kind of time. With its long descriptive passages and infrequent use of active verbs, time slows down and it spreads out. And time is rhythmic and cyclical. It's not just linear. There's a season for everything. So I went through this week and I read the entire 8 chapters myself, and I just wanted to experience that in the poetry. I would tell you, especially if you enjoy poetry, I think that's worth doing. Right, you might feel these long stretches of savoring. And honestly, most of the savoring is like savoring another person's body that's going on there. And then that's followed by a burst of action. right? It's like savoring, 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 longing, longing. Maybe something happens. And then it's back to the savoring and the longing. And so as I was reading it, I kept thinking of a Chinese phrase, pulling back from like 20 years ago when I studied in China. That Mandarin phrase is man man lai. It just means slowly, slowly coming. No rush, right? It'll come. And the tempo of the song, it invites us to like feel these periods of slowing and paying attention to love and to beauty. And we talked last week about how poetry usually isn't trying to tell us something direct and concrete, right? Like IKEA directions or something. It's trying to communicate by moving us, right? Through feeling, by causing us to pay attention to what emotions are arising as we read it, to like feel its pace, to experience how the words feel in our mouths. I'd say that's especially true of reading a poem in its original language, but a good translator will also try and capture that as much as possible, right? How does it feel to speak it? And what is it like to imagine the sensory pictures that the poem's evoking? So I'm going to read just a little part of the song here to give you a feel for what I mean. And I've chosen a passage that has some metaphors that we might find a little funny. And mainly I did this because so much of the poem has erotic double entendre that I'm too embarrassed to read from up here. So this is from a little bit of a lighter bit of chapter 4. And notice that like the lover's just kind of taking their time, going from the head down, right? How beautiful you are, my love. How very beautiful. Your eyes are doves behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats moving down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes that have come up from the washing, all of which bear twins, and not one among them is bereaved. I am going to pause here because this is a little funny. Right, so Rachel and I had our 11th anniversary, not this last Friday, but the Friday before, and we went out to eat to a nice little restaurant. We were coming home, and I was telling her about how I was going to preach on the Song of Songs, and I joked with her. I was like, next time we go out to a really nice restaurant, I'm going to look at you over the table and tell you that your hair is like the hair of a goat. And without missing a beat, this woman was like, and I'm going to tell you, your teeth are like two sheep, each has its pair. I was like, that is the woman for me. Your lips, oh, I won't read it to you. Your lips are like a crimson thread. Your mouth is lovely. Your cheeks are like the halves of a pomegranate behind your veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built in courses. Why, thank you. On it hang 1,000 bucklers, all of them shields of warriors. Your breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle, that feed among the lilies. Until the day breathes and the shadows flee, I will hasten to the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. You are altogether beautiful, my love. There is no flaw in you. Right, there is nothing else happening here except for beholding and longing and appreciating, right? And then that's followed by insinuations of lovemaking or dreams of it. And so you have both this longing and eventually consummation after these long, long verses expressing desire. But even after that consummation, like the ebb and flow of the courtship continues. It's not like, oh, a goal has been achieved. Zip, boom, bonjour. Here we go. On we move. No, the journey of love, it doesn't get stymied, it doesn't lose its luster, but the song suggests that longing is very much a part of this cycle of keeping love thriving, right? Slowing down and appreciating your lover. And the song suggests that love and attentiveness belong together, right? To love someone is to notice them. And to love God is in part to become more attentive to God's presence in the world. And to love creation is to recognize that the earth isn't just this stage on which our lives unfold, but it's a living community to which we belong. Right? That this attentiveness and unity and connection and holistic love, these are all intertwined. And to learn to love well, we're invited to pay attention. Rabbi Ellen Bernstein says that in order to care for the earth well, we have to fall in love with it. Right? We need to swoon over it a little bit. We need to not be bored by it. And I think that the Song of Songs teaches us that as we learn to pay attention to our lovers and to God and the world around us, we also learn to recognize these seasons that we're in so that we can accept where we're at and we can do what's appropriate for that season, right? Sometimes we need to rest. Sometimes we need to sit and sprout so we can grow properly, so we can become attuned to loving well. Sometimes we have to take care of ourselves and we have to just sit outside the nest and let somebody feed us some worms for a couple of weeks until we're ready to jump off the ledge when the time comes. Right? We see in the song there are these times when the lovers are observing the seasons and they recognize it's not quite ready for the full rush of the relationship and that they maybe need to sit and wonder at each other a little while longer. The Song of Songs 6:11 says, I went down to the nut orchard to look at the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vines had budded and whether the pomegranates were in bloom. Well, at this point, the vines and the pomegranates were not yet ready. So then we get another round of slowing down and some more adoration of the lover's body. It says, how graceful are your feet in sandals, O queenly maiden. Your rounded thighs are like jewels, the work of a master's hand. Your navel is a rounded bowl, may it never lack mixed wine, and your belly is a heap of wheat encircled with lilies. But then after it's getting really hot in there, they go and check again. They're like, let's go again and see if the vines have budded and the pomegranates are ready. I am my beloved, and his desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let's go into the fields and lodge in the villages. Let us go out early to the vineyards and let us see whether the vines have budded and whether the grape blossoms have opened and the pomegranates are in bloom. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give forth fragrance, and over our doors are all choice fruits, new as well as old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. Right, so we know that the vines are ripe now because the choice fruits are over their doors. Right, these are ready for the picking, ready for the eating. And the mandrakes smell nice. Now, mandrakes were believed to be an aphrodisiac. The Hebrew root word for it means love plants. That's a little bit different than how mandrakes are perceived in Western literature. Right? So if you pull up a mandrake plant, the roots below it look like kind of like strange small people. And so in the Greek and European traditions, it was said that these people, when pulled up, would give like a demonic shriek when you pulled them from the ground, right? That's why they scream in Professor Sprout's class in the Harry Potter books, right? They have to put the earmuffs on. But the Hebrew tradition is the opposite side of the spectrum for how to view the mandrakes. Like, these are sexy plants. These are the love plants. And then three times in the poem, the woman cautions us, do not stir up or awaken love until it's ready. Do not stir up or awaken love until it's ready. Do not stir up or awaken love until it's ready. And now it's ready, right? The love plants are in bloom. It's like, go for it, because when the timing is right for something, it's more likely to thrive or to succeed, right? I don't want to plant pumpkin seeds in February because those are going to freeze and not sprout. I want to plant them now. I probably should have planted them last week, but I am going to plant them before I leave, right? You want to do things in the right season for those to have the maximum thriving. I'll leave you with this. It's a beautiful commentary that actually Ken mailed me. I was talking to him about the sermon series, and he's like, oh, I've got the best commentary on the Song of Songs. I'll mail it to you. And he did immediately. It was really sweet. It's one written by husband and wife, Chana and Ariel Bloch, and it talks about how the Song of Songs doesn't have either a proper beginning or a proper end. Right? It's not a linear story. It starts in the middle of this pre-existing courtship, and then it ends with the woman saying, run away, my beloved. Make haste. Go, be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of spices. Right, so it's not a finished story. It's not like a Disney movie where they get married at the end and all is well. It's like this ongoing story that we're dipping into, and this is one. It ends on one of the ebbs, right? And so the blocks write that the shooing off of her lover implies another meeting, right? Another return. And that lack of closure at the end of the poem has the effect of prolonging indefinitely the moment of youth and love and keeping it, in Keats's phrase, forever warm. So learning to love each other and to love God and to love creation, these are unending processes that we're invited into. And that we can relax into that and we can trust the Spirit to teach us to read the seasons and to pay attention to beauty and to grace in unexpected places so that our capacity for love expands. I know for those of you who were here last week, I had a little suggested practice, and I don't often do this, but for those of you who enjoy that, I had suggested that you go out and just watch an animal for 20 minutes, which can be a little hard to make that, like, you know, that attentiveness, but just practicing watching. And I thought this week, if you're up for it, and if it's not too hot out, maybe just go out and take a slow walk and look for evidence of the season that we're in. And that might seem a little mundane, but I think it's a practice that could help us just pay attention, right? Take our thoughts out of our head, get out of a podcast, and just pay attention to the world around us, how flush the leaves are, how like some of the bugs are in like the caterpillar phase. So you might see evidence of caterpillars eating the leaves, or you might see some seed heads next to some of the flowers, and just sort of notice what's blooming, what's coming into bloom, what's going out of bloom, and just pay attention to the beginning of summer that we're in. And I put this, I think, in the notes, so if it's helpful to you, if you like a little mantra, either as a breath exercise or something that you can say to yourself as you're walking, everything has its season, I don't have to rush mine. Everything has its season, I don't have to rush mine. And I'm going to invite us to do that for our meditation time if you would like to, just as a breath prayer. We'll just spend about a minute on the in-breath. Everything has its season. On the out-breath, I don't have to rush mine. And just feel God's pleasure and love at wherever that is, whatever season you're in. Everything has its season. I don't have to rush mine. I'll let you know when the time's up. Holy Spirit, I ask that you would just give us the freedom to experience and even enjoy whatever season that we're in. I ask that you would open our eyes to see anything that you're trying to show us or bring our attention toward. I ask, Lord, that you would help us to just really fall in love with creation, even more than some of us already have, and that you would help us to swoon over it a little and to find things to not be bored about in it. I ask that you also help us to have that same sort of attentiveness toward our loved ones and toward you, Lord, so that we would notice where your presence is manifesting as we go through our day-to-day lives. Lord, help us to be people of love. Help us to be a people whose hearts are just open to falling more and more in love with the world around us and with these other fellow creatures that you've created, both animal and human, Lord. Let us just be lovers of creation the way you're a lover of creation. In your name I pray. Amen.